More at OOMA.com.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today we're going to hear most of a recent Tampa Tiger Bay Club wrap-up of the recent Florida legislative session. We'll hear about controversial bills that we've been talking about a lot here on WMNF, including last hour. Some of the bills like the toll roads to nowhere in rural Florida, teachers with guns, reproductive freedom, and the pay disparity between women and men. We might not have time to take calls until the end of the show, but I'll give you the number now just in case you want to get ready for the last maybe 10 minutes or so when we take phone calls. The number here is 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org. You can text 813-433-0885. So on May 17th, so a couple of weeks ago, Tiger Bay hosted four Florida legislators from the Tampa Bay area. We're going to hear from three Democrats, State Representative Fentress Driscoll, State Senators Daryl Rousson and Janet Cruz, and Republican State Representative Jamie Grant. The first topic that we'll hear about is one that we just talked about last hour. We'll continue several of the conversations from last hour's radioactivity. Here's a question from a Tampa Tiger Bay Club member about the new Florida law that allows some teachers to carry guns in their classrooms. And after that, we'll hear a question by a Hillsborough County School Board member about mental health funding. So here is the first set of questions that were put to Jamie Grant, Fentress Driscoll, Daryl Rousson, and Janet Cruz.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Corwin, and I guess this is really for Representative Grant. Throughout Florida and Hillsborough County, we've seen recently a number of incidents where guns were accidentally discharged. Here in Hillsborough County, we had a death of a construction worker last week. A couple of times it's happened in public supermarkets. What's the plan for when a gun accidentally discharges in a classroom and students are present, students are injured, students are killed?
Yeah, so I guess you're talking about the Guardian program? Yeah, so there's been a lot of misinformation on this. I've got good news for those of you who don't want teachers armed. Nothing in Tallahassee armed a teacher. Nothing in Tallahassee this year allowed a teacher to electively say, I want to carry. What happened last year with the Guardian program was to say that if a school district chooses to deploy the Guardian program, then they can do it. Here's the basis, and this is something we all have to be sober about. We do a lot of great bipartisan work, but that bipartisan work always starts with truth, with fact. One absolutely indisputable fact is that we continue to send our children to the most statistically dangerous place in America for mass shootings. 98% and growing of mass shootings in America happen in a gun-free zone. What we've said in Tallahassee is we should be eradicating the gun-free zones. What a lot of people think that ends up meaning is that we want guns everywhere, and those are not the same thing. What we want is these terrorists who continue to raise their hand through their manifestos, their journals, and the litigation process and say, the reason I went to a gun-free zone was I knew there would be no kickback. So what we did this year was reform and expand the Guardian program in a way that provides greater access only if the school district opts in, and we also funded additional SROs. So nothing in Tallahassee says there's going to be a gun in a school district or a classroom that does not stand up and say, we're tired of gun-free zones being at a 98% clip where mass shootings happen. We want the school districts to make the best decisions for themselves. That's exactly what we've done.
Thank you. Thank you. We do allow for responses as well under the same time limit on questions that were directed specifically to one of our panelists. So,
thank you, Yvonne. And so to address your question, the fact of the matter is that in that bill that passed expanding the Guardian program, there is no plan for what will happen if there's an accidental discharge. And there were many of us who during debate asked those questions. So what will happen? What is the school district's liability going to look like? What should the insurance requirements be? How should these firearms be stored? And the bill answered none of that. And unfortunately, the bill sponsor was not willing to address any of that. So the fact remains that, you know, I happen to not agree with that, with arming teachers. The folks that we heard from or that I heard from, the teachers didn't want it, the parents didn't want it, and the students didn't want it. So I really don't understand what we're doing here. But if we are going to do a bill like that, it needs to be responsible and address those sort of issues, and the legislature simply failed on that front.
He's sandbagging you.
He is.
Remember who your friend is.
He is. The Guardian program sets aside $60 million to train and arm teachers. And the Guardian program is very specific and says that you cannot use that money for anything but that. Thank goodness, everyone, make sure that you thank him when you see him. Thank goodness for our sheriff, Chad Cronister, who is not supportive of the Guardian program. And I think the real shame here is that we can't take that money in a school that doesn't want to arm a teacher. They cannot divert that fund for a resource officer. They cannot divert that fund for fencing if they're in a rural area and they need they are a school that doesn't have any fencing around it. So I think that the Guardian program needs more flexibility, and that was just impossible to try to push through.
That was Janet Cruz. Sure. Here's Daryl Russo.
Well, let me just say that I agree with the comments of Senator Cruz and Representative Driscoll. We were all in Tallahassee when those 6,000 kids came, and they asked us to do two things. One said, don't arm our teachers. And the second was ban assault weapons. And they said, why can't you do this? They came with idealism. Certain people tried to put pragmatic realism into them, but they came with idealism. We could have done both, and we failed them on that. The thing that Representative Grant is saying is that school districts opt out or opt in, but the whole problem is bringing more guns to a gunfight. Teachers don't want to be armed. They want to teach our children. And we put them in this unfortunate position of having to be law enforcement in addition to teaching. So I agree with the comments of my colleagues.
A couple things I'd say. We didn't need to address traditional tort principles. I mean, it would be obnoxious for the Florida legislature to come create a new system of tortious liability. So when we ask the question of, you know, what kind of E&O policy would a district carry, they'd carry an E&O policy that's reflective of risk. And so we shouldn't be managing risk pools in Tallahassee. We've seen what happens when Tallahassee tries to run risk pools. It takes more of your tax dollar. Two, I think people are getting lost here. Everything that we have done in this program came out of the Stoneman-Douglas Commission. So if we're going to talk about where recommendations are coming from, these aren't pie-in-the-sky initiatives. These are people who studied and met repeatedly on exactly what happened at Parkland. And then the third thing I would say is never forget the distinction between simply saying there's no more gun-free zones and the presence of guns. Those are not the same thing. And so what we find time and time and time and time again is that these terrorists, and call them what they are terrorists, are coming to our schools as soft targets, knowing that there is not going to be any counterforce. If they simply had to wonder whether or not there's a counterforce, we have made our children inherently safer, and we've done that in a way that maintained the opportunity for the school district, the sheriff, to figure out what's right in each community around the state. I'm proud to defend that.
Thank you. We're going to move on. Okay. We're going to move on.
Well, we're kind of going to move on, because in talking about Stoneman Douglas, I would like for you to talk a little more about not the terrorists in the room, because they're not terrorists, they're mentally ill. And we're not addressing the true problem, which is not the guns, but it's the people who end up with the guns, who've lost their mind and decide to show up at a school and shoot up their friends. Let's face it, all of the things that have happened all the way back to 20 years ago are white males with mental illness. Let's address the real problem. So I would like for you to talk about what is it that you're going to do about the 90% of the money that came through for mental illness that we are being forced as a school district to push out into the community. That does not help my students. If students needed services out in the community, they'd go there. Tell me how you're going to fund school psychologists, guidance counselors, and people to help our kids inside schools.
I figure I'll go last because it's going to be three on one all day.
That's an excellent point. And it is such a good point that school board member Perez had the courage yesterday to ask that of the First Lady at the Roland Park Magnet School rollout of hope for healing. At the time Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was happening, we were in K through 12 Senate committee meeting with Senator Pasadomo announcing a record $40 million spending on mental health of students. After we concluded committee and unveiled what had happened while we were in that, we were able to push that to $70 million. But in visiting Blake High School and my visit to Middleton High School, what I heard was that we're not doing the funding directly to the schools so that the children get direct services. We shouldn't be pushing them out into the community. We need to increase school psychologists, school counselors, and those kinds of things that bring direct services to the children.
Thank you.
That was Daryl Lusson. Coming up next is Janet Cruz.
If you get into the schools and you talk to teachers and principals, one extreme shortage that they have are guidance counselors. And you know what guidance counselors are doing mostly these days? Administering tests. They're not counseling for anything. I think we have to back up and say the real issue here is funding. We have a terrible teacher shortage. We're not funding our schools. And that's really the answer. Until we have funding to pay for mental health counselors, until we have funding to pay for teachers, I mean, we passed a teacher bonus. Now, teachers will be happy to receive more money, but guess what? When it's a bonus, it doesn't contribute to their retirement. When it's a bonus, they can't use it to go borrow money to buy a house or a car because it's a bonus. It's not a raise. It's not a raise in their salary. We can't do any of this if we don't raise teacher pay and fund public schools. That's the bottom line.
This is Jamie Grant.
Fincher, so you weighing in on this? I didn't know if I just figured. Okay, all right. So thank you for the question, Cindy. I'd say one thing. They're not mutually exclusive. The classification between somebody who's mentally ill and somebody being a terrorist are not mutually exclusive. And I do think that mental illness is one of the most frustrating issues I've confronted in the legislature, because if you handed us $1 trillion right now, we couldn't fix it. We really don't know what we don't know. The science of the brain, the research side, the clinical pathways are really in their infancy. And so we have continued to try and put money and try and do the best, but I think it would be disingenuous for any of us to say that we have the answer on mental health. I think that would be misguided because we don't know even in the academic and clinical world what's happening there. The second thing I'd say is Parkland is a fundamental example of putting hope in government to be all cures. The thing that hit me with Parkland is that if we didn't have the ability to stop Parkland, we don't have the ability to stop anything. You had state, local, and federal law enforcement, education, and healthcare entities involved with everything necessary to say, this is a terrorist, mentally ill or not. This young man has raised his head and said, I want to kill people. And we couldn't stop it. I will simply say that I'll wrap here because I know I'm out of time and there's a lot that got brought up. Maybe I get 2 minutes because I'm 3-1 all day, but kidding aside.
Only here, not in Tallahassee.
It's fun. These are good friends. The last thing I'd say is government's the only place where we equate the amount of money to your passion or priority around something. Nowhere in your business do you get to walk in and say, hey, do you hate marketing? If you don't hate marketing, why don't you quadruple the spend? Hey, do you hate research and development? If you don't hate it, why don't you raise it tenfold? We never do value calculations in government. And when we talk about education in Florida, I'm not saying we have it all right, but here's a couple things that are indisputable. From organizations like NAEP, Education Weekly, we just got ranked again by U.S. News and World Report, the best higher ed system in America. When you look at the gains that have been made in the minority and impoverished community, the only population that competes with Florida's population are kids getting educated in a military institution.
Yeah.
When you adjust Florida's demographics, we're number 4 in the country.
I'm sorry, we do need to keep moving. Thank you.
That was Jamie Grant.
And then just like 2 seconds on that topic. I mean, money helps. Money helps. And if you want public education funding to be a priority, you really have to check and make sure that you're sending people to Tallahassee who are going to make that a priority.
Well, that was Fentress Driscoll. She's a Democratic state representative in the Tampa Bay area. Also, we heard earlier before that Jamie Grant, who is a state representative and a Republican. And we heard from two Democratic state senators, Janet Cruz and Daryl Roussan as well. And you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm hosting Midpoint Monday, and it's 12:20 in the afternoon. We're listening to a May 17th Tiger Bay wrap-up of the Florida legislative session, and we're hearing from these four legislators, and they talked about a lot of different very controversial topics that we're still talking about now 2 weeks later. And so that's why I'm playing this for you, and we will take your thoughts on it later on in the show. Right now we're going to move to another topical conversation that's been very much talked about in the last few weeks, and that's Amendment 4 that authorized the restoration of civil rights, specifically voting rights, to people who were felons and who had lost them. So, the Republican Jamie Grant here was one of the architects of the legislature that's the implementing bill, that is, of the Amendment 4. And so they were all asked about this. Grant will answer first, and he'll also get a follow up at the end there in this, what we're about to hear. So the Tampa Tiger Bay member Alma Gonzalez asked these four local state legislators about the government of Florida taking away the rights of voters in two different ways. One was by placing limits on which ex-felons would get their rights to vote back through Amendment 4. And another was making it more difficult to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot. So we'll hear first and last from Republican Representative Jamie Grant. Then we'll hear from Democratic Senator Janet Cruz, who called Grant's response a load of crap.
Good afternoon, Alma Gonzalez. I am a member of the Tiger Bay. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for doing all the hard work that you do in Tallahassee. It is a very difficult job, and we're so grateful. My question has to do with citizens' initiatives. More and more and more, citizens don't trust y'all. Sorry. So we have more and more citizens' initiatives. And yet folks like you, Mr. Grant, despite the fact that you've shaved your face, we still recognize who you are. Folks like you don't seem to, would you agree that your decision to get in the way of Amendment 4 and to change the requirements for petition gathering is in fact the reason why citizens don't trust you?
Well, that's a lot for a minute. The short answer is no. We live in a constitutional republic. It's the most successful experiment in the history of mankind. I personally believe we shouldn't argue with that kind of success. Nobody got in the way of Amendment 4. Anybody who does their research would understand that the proponents, in explaining exactly what the amendment meant to even be eligible for the ballot, had a much more restrictive criteria than I did as the author of the bill. The very proponents who were asking you to vote for it, publicly campaigning for it, had a much stricter criteria than my bill. And so when we look at the constitutional amendment process, what I'm not open to is allowing people to pull the rug out from underneath voters and say, here's the offer. Do you believe we should have automatic restoration of rights under these criteria? And all through the process say that these criteria mean exactly this. And then as soon as it passed, come apply political pressure, hoping I'll back down and say it's just too much. I'll never back down from doing what's right and what's true. And in that scenario, the rug was being pulled out from underneath voters to explicitly change the offer. When you ask about the citizen initiative, anybody who doesn't recognize that a billionaire of all sides of the aisle, I have no problem saying I get scared of Tom Steyer and George Soros, who don't get governed by Florida's Constitution or have to live under it, spending a bunch of money in a marketing campaign with no accountability, amending our Constitution. Simultaneously, my friends up here should be worried about Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers. I thought that the citizen initiative petition would be an arms race, a ceasefire against the arms race of big money coming into our Constitution. I'm very proud of the work we did on that.
You know, I've served with Jamie Grant for a long time, and I really love him, but sometimes I'm listening to that, Jamie, and I'm saying that's a load of crap. Listen, what we did, what happens is we pass a wonderful amendment that restores or attempts to restore voters' rights. And then we have to implement this. It's called an implementing bill. How do we do it? And in my opinion, what we imposed here was a poll tax. What we're imposing here are hurdles to vote. It's impossible. It will be nearly impossible for many felons or ex-felons, I should say, to vote, and they will just turn away. And that's the intention here. The intention here is to circumvent the will of the amendment, and I believe it passed by almost 70%. And if you remember when we passed medical marijuana in an amendment, there was a lot of circumventing and a lot of game playing with implementing that bill too. It's much of the same.
Well, okay. I disagree with anything that limits the right of the people to express themselves through the petition gathering process. Mm-hmm. Having been the only sitting legislator this year that served on both Tax and Budget Reform Commission and the Constitutional Revision Commission, I understand the value and the importance of citizen-led initiatives and how sometimes people get frustrated with the legislature's reluctance and reticence to do things that the people want. And we should have this method of acknowledging that people can participate in the process. We've made it harder. I'm worried about big money interests coming in, but I'm more worried about the little people and how they can express themselves with a reluctant legislature.
That was Darrell Roussan. We're going to hear from
Fentress
Driscoll.
Ditto everything that my colleague Senator Roussan said with respect to gathering petitions. With respect to Amendment 4, there was nothing in that amendment, in the text of that amendment, that would require us to have completion of financial obligations in the sentence before voting. There was nothing in the text of the amendment that required that. There's nothing else in the Constitution that would have required that. So please understand that it was a policy choice that the legislature made. Now, you can look back at the testimony that was given before the Supreme Court for Amendment 4, but voters didn't know that when they went into the voting booth. The people that I heard from in my district, and I understand that there are people, other folks may have heard from who felt the other way, but they thought that it was once you served your time, then you're done. So now we're creating this system. There's no system in place, by the way, to verify whether or not you've completed those financial obligations. So what we're doing is requiring the expenditure of taxpayer dollars and an expansion of government, and I'm a Democrat saying this, to require us to verify whether or not you've done that when we sort of simply based it on your time served, whether you've completed your sentence, probation and parole, which are very easy to determine. So I think that bill went too far.
That was Fentress Driscoll.
There's stuff on Amendment 4 that I think is, and I'd ask for a little bit of latitude here, because there's a lot that's been said. I'd sum it up this way for anybody that's a lawyer in the room. When your position is concretely, indisputably rebutted by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, you know how extreme it is. The Ninth Circuit, where venue shopping happens all day long to figure out how I can get progressive case law to create a conflict to go up to Supreme Court. The Ninth Circuit was far stricter than my Amendment 4 legislation when discussing what lost a right and what brings a right back. Secondly, we had a state attorney here in town who liked to weigh in on what a sentence is and get on a soapbox about how the criminal justice world is discriminatory. Oftentimes in state attorney's office, there's trial penalties. I'd like to know if our state attorney is going to get rid of trial penalties that say, hey, if you choose to take depositions or discovery exercising due process, there will no longer be a trial penalty because the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment matter. And lastly, when we look at it, the definition of a sentence wasn't created by us. The only components of a sentence are handed out at a sentencing hearing included in a sentencing document. It wasn't a policy decision. It was just intellectual honesty that said, this is the policy decisions. What we did actually create was multiple pathways for somebody to complete their sentence in non-traditional ways.
Thank you.
Anybody who looks at that bill and
we
does their homework can't argue
30
with
seconds.
That.
Well, that was State Representative Jamie Grant, a Republican from Hillsborough County, represents parts of Pinellas County as well. He was instrumental in pushing through an implementing bill for Amendment 4 that will make it more difficult for people who are returning felons, people returning to the life as outside the prisons to get their constitutional rights back, including their right to vote. Amendment 4 was passed in 2018 by a lot of Floridians, by something like 60-something percent, I think it was. And so it's now part of the Florida Constitution. It automatically grants the right to vote to most ex-felons. And the implementing bill placed by the Florida legislature made it a little bit more difficult because now people will still have to pay their fees back before they get the right to vote back. And that takes effect on July 1st. Well, you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. It's 12:30 in the afternoon. We're going to continue listening to these four Tampa Bay area Florida legislators that were speaking 2 weeks ago at Tampa Tiger Bay Club in a wrap-up of some of the most controversial things that happened during the legislative session. So far, we've heard about their votes on arming teachers, their votes on Amendment 4, the implementing bill for restoring rights. Now we're going to look at a very controversial bill that, and we're specifically going to look at, we're going to target the Democrats here because two Democrats were asked why they voted to support toll roads. Governor Ron DeSantis approved a measure that would that could pave the way for the state's first major highway expansion in decades. The effort was led by State Senate President Bill Galvano, who pushed the roads as a way to aid in evacuations, promote growth in rural parts of the state, and help transport an ever-growing population. The three proposed toll highways through rural Florida would be from Polk County to Collier County, from the end of the Suncoast Parkway north to the Georgia line, and from the Suncoast to the Florida Turnpike. But environmentalists argue that the idea could be a disaster for fragile ecosystems. At the Tampa Tiger Bay Club, Democratic Senators Daryl Rousson and Janet Cruz defended their votes for this bill, saying the new highways could help during hurricane evacuations. So let's hear their responses when asked. The other two people who voted, well, Jamie Grant voted for it, but Fentress Driscoll voted against it. They declined to answer this question, but here's the question about toll roads on 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa.
My name is Ella Coffey. My question is, if you can explain a little bit, Senator Rousson and Senator Cruz, Tampa Toll roads coming through, the your vote on Tampa Toll. Just kind of give us a little bit of explanation on that. Thank you.
Well, when that bill was on the Senate floor, it was a study. That was, the bill was a study. Portion of it is a study. So that seemed reasonable. And then I give kudos to Senator Linda Stewart, who worked very hard, very, very hard, to make sure that the environmental groups had a seat at the table for that study. So at the time that I voted for the bill, it sounded reasonable. I know, listen, I don't like toll roads, and I know that the environmentalists are upset about the possibility of this, but the last time that we had to evacuate, or people were evacuating this state, I watched on the television, even though people argued with me that it didn't happen, I saw people with their cars on the side of the road because they didn't have access to gas, stranded there with families. So I do believe, and if you've been in Tampa in the last 3 or 4 years, you can see that the traffic has tripled, and it's harder to get around. I don't know how we avoid this.
It was difficult not to vote for a task force, a study. Nothing in the bill obligated the road to be built right now. And quite frankly, some of the leadership that pushed this bill won't be around when the task force returns its recommendations and it comes back to the legislature for appropriation. But I join Senator Cruz in her concern about congestion during evacuating times. We all saw the pictures. We all saw the vivid reminders. What I really thought you might ask a question about was the Competitive Workforce Act, that for a third year in a row we couldn't get a hearing so that people of LGBT community could be respected in their workplace.
Well, that was Democratic State Senator Daryl Rousson. And before him, we heard his Democratic Senate colleague, Janet Cruz, both of them from the Tampa area and St. Pete area, talking about their votes to support these toll roads, or the study of these toll roads through rural parts of Florida. And so later on in the show, when we open up the phone lines, you can let us know what you think about their votes and their responses about why they voted for that. You can also email your comments in right now, dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. I'm going to open the phone lines in about 15, 20 minutes. And so if you like to hold on the line, you can call now at 813-239-9663. Or you can just give us a call in like 10 minutes and let us know what you think about these thoughts, about these topics and the responses by the legislators. Again, we're hearing from Tiger Bay a speech that was at Tiger Bay about 2 weeks ago, where four Florida legislators from the Tampa Bay area were speaking about the most recent Florida legislative session. We're hearing from State Representative Fentress Driscoll, a Democrat, and Democratic State Senators Daryl Roussan and Janet Cruz, and Republican State Representative Jamie Grant. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. It's 12:36 in the afternoon. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. And the next thing we're going to hear about is the four legislators were asked, what was the most important thing that was addressed or not addressed in this legislative session? So here are their responses to that question. We're going to hear first from Fentress Driscoll, then from Daryl Roussan, then Janet Cruz, and then finally Jamie Grant. So here is what they think the most important thing that was addressed or not addressed.
Good afternoon. As I mentioned before, I'm Fentress Driscoll representing District 63, which includes a great deal of North Tampa area, so parts of Carrollwood, Lutz, University area, New Tampa, and Moffitt. It's a delight to be here. And we thank you for the opportunity to share with you some of the work that we've been doing up in Tallahassee. So in terms of what I think the most important thing that was addressed, kind of want to focus on the things that were not. So I'm a big proponent of public education in our public schools. Yes. And so in passing our budget, I'm happy to report that we did increase the base student allocation per student by over $200. That's a significant improvement. I was really glad to see that. But where I think that we have fallen short, and it seems to be a trend that is continuing, is just overall funding for our public schools. So what we saw was an expansion of the voucher program, whereas before that program was strictly through tax credits. Now it's coming out of the general allocation dollars. I would fully believe that that's unconstitutional. There's a 2006 Supreme Court case, Bush versus Holmes, where the legislature previously tried the same program and it was found unconstitutional because the Florida Constitutional requires the legislature to provide adequate funding for a high quality system and uniform system of public schools. And I believe that this legislation is trying to create almost a separate but an equal kind of situation. So that to me is one of the things that I was disappointed to see. And I think that you will find many advocates on this panel that will continue to fight for our public schools and try to make sure that things are more equitable going forward.
That was Fentress Driscoll, a Democrat from Tampa, State Representative.
Thank you, and Daryl Roussan. And I bring you greetings from the constituents, many of you who are members of Senate District 19. Like Fentress said, there was not one Senate Democrat that voted for that private school voucher bill because we thought it was a bad bill. It goes too far. We played a lot of defense this session against some bad things that we couldn't win, but we could speak policy through our amendments, trying to make bad bills better. Unfortunately, they didn't take a lot of our amendments. But I think there were some significant things that happened. Criminal justice reform. We've come a long way in my 10 years in the legislature to move the needle towards more reform. And some of you may remember I've worked on driver's license suspension reform for the last 4 years, and we were able finally to get some reform in that bill that Jeff Brandis and I filed in the Senate. Substance abuse and mental health. As you know, we lost 5,725 Floridians in 1 year, 14 to 16 every day in this state in 2016 alone. I asked the legislature for additional funding. I was able to come away with $6 million that'll be spent through the managing entities to help with this opioid crisis, the addiction epidemic that we're involved in, and that Hillsborough County at one point was an epicenter for overdoses and deaths. Lastly, the arts. Some of you will remember that the arts got cut 90% in our budget last year, from $21 million down to $2 million. We were able to restore at least 50% of full funding at, again, $21 million in that. And PolitiFact has not proven me wrong yet, but I don't think there's a senator in the state of Florida that has more theaters, museums, arts in their district than me because of the configuration. Mersani, Straz, Tampa Theater, Tampa Museum of the Art, and over in St. Pete, Dolly, Chihuly, Morian. So I'm very proud of the arts funding that we were able to get in the budget.
When we talk about session, oftentimes we talk about bills, but It's important that we bring home the bacon. What have we done for our community in a budget that is $90 billion? And I'm very proud to say that my name is on the PICO request for $12.5 million to finish up the medical school, Morsani Center, USF. So we're thrilled that that final allocation is in. And I don't know if anyone has driven past that building lately, but it's magnificent, and I can't wait to see it completed. So I'm very happy about that. Disappointment for me this session was that I started a campaign to take lead, put filters in the drinking fountains in schools that were built before 1986, because those schools have lead in the pipes. And I begged and pleaded and went everywhere asking for a hearing. I had one hearing, and in that committee, everyone voted unanimous. But they had a hard time assessing the fiscal on that. But I'm not going to wait until this bill passes. I've met with the school superintendent, and it's my intention this summer to create a public-private partnership where I raise money so that we can put filters in all of these schools on our own. So I need your help. Anyone knows of corporations that want to help, we have started this program. My chief of staff, Jenna Kingry, is around here somewhere, but we are working furiously on this, and we're going to do a major rollout on it. But that's my plan for the summer is, I have 8 seconds left, is to get the lead out.
That's Janet Cruz. We'll next hear from Jamie Grant.
I appreciate y'all having me today. I'm Jamie Grant. I represent all of Northwest Hillsborough County, Northeast Pinellas County. I think today is a good reminder, sitting with some of my good friends who I enjoy working with, that your description of session is often a difference in the matter of perspective, because I don't have a lot of disappointments this year. I think what we did to eliminate the wait list for a number of families in the state of Florida, tens of thousands of families whose only distinction between an education that is more fitting of their child's needs or an education that gets a kid out of a designated failure factory, with the only difference being, if we talk about separate but unequal, the most discriminatory thing we have in our society today is the fact that the educational opportunities that exist in the state of Florida and around the country depend on the amount of money you have. I'm proud of the work that we have done to step up and continue saying that money should never be the differential between a world-class education or the best education. And what we continually find is that, and it's whether it's education or healthcare across the board, what we find is people say, well, we just need more money to cure it. Nobody steps up and says, this is how much money it takes to eradicate failure factories. This is how much money it takes to eradicate a school-to-prison pipeline. What if we just did the audacious thing to empower parents and families to make the decision that's best for them? We did the same thing in healthcare. The two biggest cost drivers in healthcare, anybody who runs a risk pool would tell you. An industry that is 20% of our GDP and rising, every business in America is in the business of healthcare, whether they want to be or not, because premiums, deductibles continue to rise while the network and access continue to reduce. There's two drivers. It's cost of prescriptions and it's acute care. What we did this year was transformational change to say certificate of need reform and the monopoly that has existed to prevent patient access and entrepreneurs from opening up opportunities to provide better, faster, cheaper health care are no longer going to be in place. So we repealed certificate of need. Incredibly proud of the work we did there. Lastly, on the health care side, the Canadian import stuff. There's been a lot said. I'd simply suggest that where we can reduce the drug spend with the exact same drugs being purchasable, but I will close with what I'm most proud of. Our Constitution has been wide open to the world, to the public. We changed that this year. That will always be my most proud accomplishment in the Florida legislature.
Well, that was Jamie Grant, and before him we heard Janet Cruz, then Daryl Rousson, and First Ventress Driscoll, and we'll hear more from them in just a second, but I want to let you know you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. A couple of weeks ago, Tampa Tiger Bay hosted four Florida legislators from the Tampa Bay area, and they did a wrap-up of the recent legislative session. And it's 12:45 in the afternoon. We're going to get to a couple of more of these responses. And the first one is about reproductive freedom. So here is a question from a member of the audience about reproductive freedom and the responses from these four legislators.
Deborah Belanti here. Thank you all for coming. My representative didn't make it, so I'm glad you're here that I can ask this question of. I have to worry as a mom about education funding, about her safety, actually going to school. Now I have to worry about her right to choose as a woman. We've seen what's happened in Alabama and Mississippi and Ohio and now in Georgia, I believe. And fortunately, the abortions bans did not pass the session, thankfully. But Representative Lauren Book has proposed an idea of not allowing any legislation concerning women's bodies and their autonomy to be passed in our legislature without more representation of women. Do you support that?
That is so interesting. I'd like to take a look at that, but I don't know that there's a way to do that. I just don't know that there's a way to do that. But what I will say is I support a woman's right to choose, and I adamantly debated against and pushed back against the bill that we're trying to restrict women's right to choose. What we have now is a law that will require parental consent. Florida had been a parental notification state, but parental consent goes a step further, and the Florida Supreme Court had previously found that that is a violation of a woman's right to privacy, which, by the way, the Florida Constitution provides a higher protection of right to privacy than even the federal Constitution does. So this very same bill that was brought forth this session was previously found unconstitutional. We're starting to see a trend with that. I don't know if you're noticing. I think part of why we're seeing that trend, if you're wondering, is because we have new appointments to the Supreme Court, and I think we've got some folks in the legislature who want to test out and see what maybe this more conservative-leaning Florida Supreme Court will do. But it's very frightening to me, and I will always stand up for a woman's right to choose.
And that's Fentress Driscoll. And next we'll hear from Daryl Rousseau.
Let me keep this simple. I support a woman's right to choose. As a man, I defer to women on this particular issue and the will of the voters in my district that elected me, period.
I think that most of you here that know me know that my daughter Anna, a partner to our new mayor Jane Castor, by the way, yay, was born when I was 16 years old. I was a junior in high school. And when I sat down with my mom and my 18-year-old boyfriend at the time and my God, it was my decision between my God, and it was my decision between my family and my boyfriend at the time, who we married and were married for 20 years. But it is not, in my opinion, the decision of the legislature. I mean, we shouldn't be legislating this. It should be between a woman, and it should be between her partner. I feel very strongly about this, and I would support... I can't imagine how we could implement something like that, but it's a good thought that I like, but I don't think it's completely practical. But you know, the decision to have a child or to abort a pregnancy is between a woman, her partner, and her God.
That's Janet Cruz. Here's Jamie Brandt.
So I think there's kind of two questions there.
Join us on this one, Jamie.
Daryl, you always know how to get me, and it starts with individual rights, individual freedoms. And there is no individual right and individual freedom that is more sacrosanct than life. The reason that the Fourth Amendment matters is that we're talking in an extreme scenario, the Fifth and Sixth Amendment, we're talking about an extreme scenario where government can take your liberty or, in the most extreme, your life. It is an oftentimes difficult conversation for us to have because it creates divides, but I'll never apologize for defending life. And that means answering some tough questions, and that means saying, even in these cases, do you believe in life? Now, what I will say is that there's a lot of hypocrisy all the way around this issue. There's hypocrisy from the pro-life crowd that pretends that once the life is born, we've done our job by defending life. The reality is our foster care program, our community services, our wraparound services are fundamentally failing. So for people like me who say I will always ardently defend life, I need to maintain that commitment on the backside, because no society is better off when life is denigrated. To the point of your question about who represents and that kind of thing, what I would suggest, and one of my favorite stories in history is Jackie Robinson. And we all remember Jackie Robinson, an amazing story. But we oftentimes forget about Branch Rickey and Pee Wee Reese. And that transformation that happened in society took people that were an affected class, and it took people that were the unaffected class, the people who were benefiting from the power or the privilege, stepping down and saying, hey, this should be a community that doesn't discriminate. And so while I think it is important that we listen to all voices, I don't know that we ever want to get to a place where we say only the affected class makes decisions on policy. I think it's more important for us to build bridges through perspectives and understanding to get to the right policy.
Well, that's Republican State Representative Jamie Grant. Before him, we heard Democratic State Senators Janet Cruz and Daryl Roussan and Democratic State Representative Fentress Driscoll. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan, and I'm bringing you some audio from the Tampa Tiger Bay Club from a couple of weeks ago where these four state legislators talked about the recent legislative session. We have one more short tape to get to that's probably the most interesting and controversial one, and so I do want your thoughts on it. And you may have heard it before. I played it last week or the week before, and I do want to hear what your thoughts are. So if you'd like to give us a call, 813-239-9663. We're going to take phone calls after I play this short tape. We just heard their opinions about reproductive freedom. But here's an exchange between Hillsborough County Clerk of Court Pat Frank, who asked if the legislators support an equal rights amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and Representative Jamie Grant, who tried to mansplain to her that there's not really a pay gap between men and women.
Am I a man or a woman?
Under pending policy, you could change your mind today to tomorrow, and so in that require, if that's
visually,
put into statute.
Visually, what am I?
A woman.
All right. But I'm not a protected class, because we do not have the amendment to the Constitution that we need, which is ERA. Will you support that?
We do have you as a protected class, because if you're discriminated on the basis of being a woman, every single thing is currently
protected.
Tell those
protected women in Alabama.
Tell them what? What would you like me to tell them?
Are you telling me that a woman cannot have an abortion when she knows she's pregnant? How does a woman know she's pregnant? She has to have a test made?
Sure, but that's a different question than whether or not females are a protected class with employment discrimination. And there's really no dispute that a woman is a protected class.
There is no question that there are protected groups. Minority groups are identified, physically identified. Women are physically identified. They should be a protected class, and women should be included in the U.S. Constitution. The one disappointment I had in the legislature was that three states were needed for ratification. I think there are now just two needed. Will you sponsor that bill?
The ERA bill?
Yes.
No, I won't.
Would the others?
And the reason is there's an absence of any indication, right?
I think it says it all to women.
Well, no, it doesn't. And I think rhetoric matters and words matter, because the reason
they
I'm not
matter,
supporting it has nothing to do with...
I'm asking you for your word.
Right. The reason I'm not supportive of that initiative is it has nothing to do actually with men versus women. The reason I don't support it is that it has a significant economic impact in the face of plenty of studies that actually show we don't oftentimes have the wage disparity that we have. And secondly, where we do have the wage disparity that exists, that's where the businesses in the community...
We don't have a wage disparity?
I think you can look at the macroeconomic studies, and I'm happy to sit down with you. You don't actually have...
I'm happy to sit down with you and tell you you're wrong.
Well, I look forward to that.
All right, so what did you think about that exchange between Pat Frank, who's the Hillsborough County Clerk of Court, one of the longest-standing elected officials in the Tampa Bay area, and Jamie Grant, Republican State Senator from the Tampa area as well. What do you think about the macroeconomics explanation that he's going to give her, that there's not always a wage gap between men and women? Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. You can also email at dj@wmnf.org. Text 813-433-0885. Of course, you could also tell us what you think about what you heard regarding Amendment 4, which is the amendment that Floridians passed that's now part of the Florida Constitution that automatically grants restoration of voting rights to almost all felons when they return to society. We also talked about reproductive freedoms. We talked about the toll roads to nowhere, the study, I guess, of the toll roads through rural Florida. And we also heard about arming teachers and the new law that was passed, that addition to the guardian law, where now school districts can opt to allow their teachers to be armed in the classrooms. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. It's 12:55 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to Midpoint Monday on WMNF. So let me read some of the emails that came in, and you can call in as well. But Jim says what he overlooks, and he here is referring, I believe, to Jamie Grant. What he overlooks is the Florida statutes has 550 infractions that result in a felony charge and loss of the right to vote. Of these 100 158 are for first-degree infractions. The rest are for second- and third-degree offenses. So many offenses make the felony charge a joke. That is why I voted for Amendment 4, and he brought the poll tax back to democracy, is what Jim says. Jim goes on to talk about abortion and says that there's been the drop in violent crime was not due to more police or prisons, but due to the passage of Roe v. Wade. The myth that a woman will change her mind once a child is born does not bear out in the real world. Jim writes a little bit more. That's a lot for me to read, so I'm going to move on to the next comments, but I do want to encourage you to call in with your thoughts. And let's see, here's what Adam has to say. Adam says, what really makes me mad is that people like Jamie Grant and other Republicans won't even own up to the fact that they want to suppress votes and disenfranchise people. Adam finishes his email by calling them such cowards. So thank you for that email, and you're welcome to email in as well. David writes, Jamie Grant always seems like he's high on cocaine. The man needs to calm down and chill out. Maybe he wouldn't come up with such crazy ideas as arming teachers if Jamie would chill. I think we need a John Wayne impersonator to come in and speak with the teachers and train them on guns. And this is David, and I am not going to do the impression, but I will read what he wrote. David goes, well, Pilgrim, if you want to be an effective shooter, you need to shoot the bad guy where it counts, between the eyes. So that's David's kind of a tongue-in-cheek description of what needs to happen regarding the bill in the Florida legislature that will allow teachers to opt in and school districts that opt in to have teachers carry guns in the classroom. And I have one other comment that came in from email, and Amendment 4, this is about Amendment 4, and it's not signed. This email, it says, if you make voting contingent on payment, you have implemented a poll tax regardless of the origin of the debt. So those are some of the emails that came in during the program. What do you think about what they said? 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and I want to let you know that after this show, you can tune in to hear one of the last four executive session shows before we move on to other programming. John Gilmore will host executive session coming up in about 7 or 8 minutes, and I want to thank Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox for calling in, and let's go to the phones right now. We have, is it Jack? Is that your name, Jack?
Yes, Sean, thank you.
Okay, what would you like to say?
Well, real quick, on the abortion issue, I think that hopefully, I know that your listeners are very educated people, and some of them are probably legal-minded. It seems to me that the abortion issue could come down to just a legal definition of what an abortion is. And what I would like the future definition to read would be that... It takes two people. It's not just the ownership of the woman. Once the man's sperm impregnates the egg, it's now the property of two people. So I understand the women have the rights to their personal body, but I don't believe they have the right to the egg itself. And so I would like for the legal definition to state that it would be okay to have an abortion. An abortion would be legal as long as it was done by a fertility clinic. And so if the woman doesn't want to have the egg inside of her, if it's a reminder of a bad situation, the egg can be removed. And we've proved through science that that surrogate mothers are a viable resource. So the egg itself should be treated as a separate entity. It can be placed into a surrogate parent, and then the person who doesn't want to have any involvement with that ongoing life, that child, can sign away their consent so that the child would become property of someone else. And then with the Article 14, I think that the legislature, since they've created this problem, should step up and make it easy for people to make payments. I know, like with the IRS, if you owe the government money, you can go online and you can make a payment.
Jack, I'm sorry I had to cut you off because it's the end of the show, and I apologize about that. If something that Jack said made you want to comment, give us a call and leave me a voicemail. I'll play it next show, 813-238-8001, extension 114. I want to thank Jack for calling in and for everyone else for emailing in. If You can join the conversation as well on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. That's at WMNF News. I want to thank Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox for being an engineer. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. So stay tuned now for executive session coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF. Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening.